and welcome to the International Trade Resource Podcast, your go-to source for insights and information on all aspects of international trade. Whether you're an entrepreneur, a trade professional, or just curious about the global marketplace, we've got you covered. From customs regulations to export strategies, from emerging markets to international finance, we explore the latest trends and best practices that drive global commerce. Our host, Kim Kirkendall, sits down with a diverse range of experts who navigate the complex world of international trade and help you stay ahead of the game. So get ready to learn about the ins and outs of international trade on the International Trade Resource Podcast.
Hello, listeners. We're really excited to have you here with us today on the International Trade Resources Podcast as we welcome Pradeep Sasidharan from the company Donsfield. And he joins us today with a lot of experience in international business, e-commerce, marketing, business development, acquisitions. He trained as a scientist at University of Oxford and at Harvard. And has a lot of experience global business in biotech and a variety of different industries. Donsfield is an e-commerce firm that he started during the pandemic, and we'll learn a little bit more about that at the end of the podcast. So thank you, Pradeep, very much for joining us today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you for the invite. I'm super excited for this podcast.
Wonderful. Well, let's jump in on our first question. Our topic today is product optimization for your e-commerce channels using data. Mm-hmm. So let's dive in on that a little bit. It seems elementary that a company would have the right products, right? Choosing the right products, making sure you're focusing the company's time and energy on the products that actually sell in your business, eliminating the products that don't sell. It's critical. It's a big part of having a very successful business. From a high level, how can companies, and we'll drill in more, but from a high level, how can companies use data to optimize their product mix?
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic question, a big picture question. So I'm not going to drill in into it, but I think you have two clear perspective here, particularly if you're a small to medium business, and then you have a large corporate and have numerous brands. When I started, I was a one-man army. The company, we looked at data differently, and we looked at, hey, what products are selling in a particular market? For us, it's the US market. What the consumer is looking for, and how quickly can we bring this product to market? And what is the search capacity, what we call the search volume of a particular product? And then how we can build the brand around it. So it's actually going counterintuitive of what we've been told, where bring your passion product or bring something, you know, that you know of. But we're going the other way around, where we looked at what the consumer wants, and that's how we use the data to build a brand around it. Now, if you're a large company and you have products already or brands and so forth, then it comes down to how quickly can I get this product into a certain marketplace and how much exposure and marketing can I put into in terms of effort. And also inventory becomes a problem, particularly if it's coming from international sources like China or India, Turkey, and how quickly can logistics play a role into keeping it. And, you know, it sounds very trivial, but we advise a lot of companies who are having a lot of logistical problems. So if you're a large company, it's how quickly you can market it and how quickly you can bring the product and replenish it, particularly during this time.
That's fantastic. So what I hear you saying is that your research, what you advise companies to do is to be customer focused, response driven. Look at what the customer wants and then develop products that you can give to them. And the other large area that data can help in is eliminating waste and inefficiencies in the supply chain. So let's go a little bit deeper into those two aspects. You know, so what kind of data would a company be looking for on the consumer focus side? And then what kind of data and how would they use it on the supply chain side?
Okay. So on the consumer side, I mean, let's take Amazon, for example, or a large marketplace. You have plenty of programs out there. Even if you Google search, you get these programs that give you search volume data available to anyone, by the way. You don't have to be a company. Anyone can subscribe to these programs. What you're looking at, key metrics are consumer search volume, keyword search volume, and I'll explain this a lot. Sales velocity, marketing spend, something called CPC, cost per click, and CPA, cost per acquisition. We believe cost per acquisition is more important. And then you're looking also, when you're at these data searches, you're looking for sellers and what kind of sellers they are. When I mean, are there any foreign sellers in the market? Because remember now, because e-commerce, you can be global. So these are the kind of five metrics we look at. And I give you an example. We recently are now launching a particular brand, and this was wholly consumer driven. We saw this particular keyword that was actually misspelt in a particular order, and I can't give away the product. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. But
just because of this misspelling, no one spotted this, and our data analysis spotted this. There's 1.2 million people in the US searching for this particular product with this particular spelling mistake. And the growth percentage was 1,700% a month. So if you have the data, it actually tells you what the consumer is looking, even if the consumer is a bit confused in the keyword. So then you have amazing data potential to actually get a very legitimate product and launch it very quickly with high sales velocity. So when I see things like this, I preach to everyone, data is king. And if you use it well, you can really understand what the consumer wants. Now, the second point about inventory and inventory management is that, again, you can use data and tools to see wasteful spending in 3PL and logistics. So we use a couple of ERP systems, to look at and integrate all our 3PLs and inventory. Particularly, by the way, what we do is we acquire companies who are distressed and turn them around. The number one thing we see is owners or even corporates ordering too much inventory because you're optimistic. So when you have the right data and metrics, you can actually see the sell-through volume and different marketplaces. And it's very hard because without online, it's actually easier online monitoring it, but it's not a brick and mortar store whereby they buy units and it's their responsibility to sell it, not yours. Now you're all in charge of the inventory, so it's your responsibility to have an inventory metric. And what we suggest is using whatever system you want to use, but make sure that you have a 20% buffer in terms of, if you want to order more, order 20 to 30% more. And it's fine if you run out, you can always replenish, but do not order over 50, 60, 80%. And that's the key metric. And I give you a fascinating fact, and this will stun the audience. It stunned me when I saw it. It was more expensive and costly, right, to have too much inventory than too less inventory. So if a company lost inventory, it can still order and serve the customer. But if there's too much inventory in a particular marketplace or location, the cost for storage, transport, and long-term growth was more expensive. So it's better actually to run out than overstock because of the 3PL logistics situation.
And I think that's, not to interrupt you, because I know I'm sure you have some more insights that you want to share on this topic, but I think that's something that a lot of businesses don't understand well, is they think the customer, many consumers, let's say, we're not talking B2B, we're talking B2C in many of these, that consumers, and even in B2B, have a higher tolerance for waiting for goods and product than the company expects. So that's important to understand. In your business, is your customer going to be tolerant in waiting for this product? You might think they want it in 3 days and they'd be okay to have it in 7, which changes your inventory levels. In another situation, they might be, if it's B2B or if it's a type of product people want for vacation and they only order it a week in advance, then there may be a higher turnaround time. So being aware of that and factoring that into your inventory management is extremely important. So I just want to tie that together.
Absolutely.
For the listeners.
I mean, I don't know what the latest trade news is, but the success of many Far Eastern companies where they get the order, then ship, and some of the consumers have to wait 7 or 10 days because they're willing to wait for a price points and quality. Or so don't worry about it. You know, even if you lose out on some customers, they're waiting. Your regular customers or the clients will wait, but don't kill yourself. Or it's Achilles heel when you order too much inventory. And also one little point is, I know a lot of maybe sellers that are going on e-commerce or who have e-commerce experience say, hey, Pradeep, what about the organic ranking? You know, if you don't have inventory, certain algorithms will put you down. Okay, yes, that is the kind of double-edged sword, but it's better to get put down on the ranking and, you know, fine-tune your advertising later to come up than actually overstock and pay too much on terms and storage. And every company we've seen gone down, we've seen that data also, that it's better to lose ranking than get more inventory.
That's important. So it's interesting, I think, for companies oftentimes, to your point earlier, they go into business, a small business owner goes into business being passion-driven or product-driven, and they're really not analyzing all these aspects of the company the way they should be. I had a call from someone yesterday with a phenomenal international trade program that they're developing around UFLPA, the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act in the U.S., and as he was talking to me about how the program runs, I said, how are you selling this? Who are you selling it to? Are you licensing it? Are you providing training? And he's like, I really hadn't thought about this. Like, you know, you need to be, to some extent, you need to be market driven, customer driven. It's great that you have a great product, but if somebody isn't willing to pay for that, you know, or pay the price you're asking, then your product isn't as great in the sense that it's not going to sell. Let's pivot a little bit to talk about, what if a company is trying to use data to fine-tune their current product mix? They want to understand, you know, primary data, which is the company's own data, external data, right? Third-party data, publicly available or what's on Amazon. How can they use data to understand what products are truly profitable? You know, and that gets to your point with inventory turns and, you know, a variety of other things. How can they use data to maximize their product mix?
I'm going to say two words, unit economics.
Okay, great.
And it sounds dumbfounded. We've looked at small business to corporates and corporates who want to sell distressed brands to us because they're failing online. Unit economics. And what people don't understand is how much is per unit costing me wherever I sell, and what is the breakdown of that unit from sourcing the material or product, saying, hey, manufacturer, how much this component costs, this component, what are the raw materials and how much these components going up in price, right? Because then the prices change every quarterly, to shipping, to storage, and then seeing the margin. So it's fascinating. Some of the companies that have data already, you need to go back to your data and saying, are my margins moving? Because now, actually, when we go to buy companies and look at companies to buy, they're still using the same COGS, cost of goods, and metrics and data from 2-3 years ago. But it's all changed, and there's no one updating. And that's not down to the CEO or COO. Because the company is too large at sometimes to actually get down to nitty gritty and constant reevaluation. You might think you're not suffering from it, but trust me, it's surprising how many the bigger companies suffer from it, right? So unit economics particularly. And what you see is if you have data and the unit economics is good and your data saying is good, you need to match up with third-party data and superimpose it, right? Always superimpose the data and say, hey, and be self-critical and say, is this really true? Because these margins we can't compete with compared to the competitors. And what you need to do is tough, but I keep saying it to companies is, you know, it's not your baby, it's your business. You need to start cutting those products, getting rid of those brands or selling them through and just stopping. And that's very important. So please look at your unit economics and to see if you have enough margin. And also the margins at the top change according to marketing spend. So we know cost per click on Google or Meta advertising or Amazon advertising is going up. So that, and remember, I said to you, you need to add in a third column into your data metrics called cost per acquisition, because Kimberly here might be buying something and she might be clicking five times on one ad before she buys. So you're paying for five pay-per-clicks, not one. So your cost per acquisition is going up. So, you know, be realistic with your data and third-party data and really check the unit economics and keep revising it.
Can you give us an example of how comparing the primary data and the third-party data can lead to a change in direction that without doing that, the company may not have realized?
Yes, absolutely. We're looking at a company to buy. We signed NDAs and everything, and we looked at it, and my team was looking at it. My team gave it to me. And there's something really off, Kimberly, with one product. It's a great product. It's a great brand. I was like, why is this price so high? And we looked at their data. We looked at third-party data. They're using Shopify, which is a DTC, but also Amazon. They were significantly higher. And you cannot say they're an outstanding brand, but they were good, doing good. And then I said, hey, something's really off here. Then we looked at the data, and it just said one line, COGS factory price. And the factory price was too high. I have experience in China. If you don't have experience, source out and ask someone. And we said, hey, look, we signed NDAs. We're really interested. Can we talk to your factory? And they're like, please do so. So we went back, and I went back and said, why is your price so high? What does this cost? What does this cost? So unit economics now. We found out that the founder actually agreed 4 years ago to get this simple metal pole that, you know, we signed an NDA, I can't say which product, that fits into this product. What this factory did is they shipped out the metal poles to get the branding on the poles, right, from a different factory, send it back to the original factory, and then they assemble it, and then they ship it out to a third person to ship it out again. So you had two lots of shipping, a third factory just doing a branding, and that cost $17. For $17, we actually worked out you can airship this product back into the US and still save money, right? And this all occurred because the data from the company seemed sound with one little field on Excel sheet looking odd, but it was in vast contrast to what the third-party data is saying in terms of unit economics, pricing and price points and what they were doing. So we actually advised the company, and they didn't sell, by the way. They went back and changed that, and they're looking to exit later on, because one of their brands now, they're saving $17 per product. So that's what real example of what can the power of data and unit economics and really diving deep and having a very close eye can do.
I think that's critical. And I would like to encourage people to think about this. Is there the underlying concept here is that when you too often get comfortable with what you're doing in your business, with the supplier that you're buying from, with the path that you're on with this product. And I've seen this especially with like inventors of products. They get very comfortable with the path they're on, and there isn't anyone in their orbit that's challenging them and saying, hey, wait a minute, this is going to take you 3 years. You know, I just had this conversation a week ago. This is an FDA regulated product. It's going to take you 3 years. It's going to cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars. But if you just break this value of the product off and provide that to the customer first, that doesn't need FDA. That allows you to build your brand. It allows you to generate money. And then you can go back down this path, right? So having someone like Pradeep, you know, or myself or an advisor or, you know, an external person that can really take a look at your business and give you that perspective. And hopefully you guys got paid for adding this bottom line value to their business, but my feeling is you didn't.
Oh, no, we didn't. We were happy. I and the companies are happy to help and serve where we can. Obviously, business is business, but it was nice to see that, because they're a good business, and yeah. they wanted to actually succeed. One thing I would say is there's a famous quote, women lie, men lie, numbers don't lie, and the data doesn't lie. But I'll put something on top. Numbers and data interpreted by people. So yes, women lie, men lie, numbers don't lie. But if you have the wrong person analyzing it, they'll lie too, or they'll misinterpret. What you need is a critical mass of people. And if the more experts, the more resources you have, then you can actually really analyze the data. And whatever data is, you got to attack it from different angles and really critically analyze it. So hence, you know, outsourcing is important. The consultants are important.
Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it. And I agree with you. So as we get kind of close to wrapping this up here in the next 5 or so minutes, you've mentioned a couple times in the podcast using data to analyze your competition and how you've brought up some great ideas of how looking at your competition isn't just the direct, you know, benefit of that, of do they have products I don't have, or those kind of direct comparisons. But there are indirect benefits to analyzing your competition. So can you talk about the kind of data that you would look at with competitors, how you would use competitors' data to optimize your company?
Yeah, sure. It's a good point. I always say competition and what competitors do are out of your control. What's in your control is to actually really realistically look at where you are in the marketplace and what's going on with your products. It's great to have passion, but once your passion product's there, it's very easy to replicate or duplicate, even if you have patents around the world. Please bear that in mind, right? So what we see is that a lot of competition, even if you have a unique product, hones in if there's a niche or a high consumer volume, right? So what you need to do with your products is always say, where's the next iteration coming from? And what's the actual other two or three products I launch around that product? So if it's a new iteration, good for you. Or if you can have a product that complements your product or actually joins another product in a bundle, then you make a unique package only your company can offer to the consumer. Well, and if you keep having that mindset, I think that will give you success online, because the competition is fierce, particularly from manufacturers, because they can now with online e-commerce can come straight to the consumer. So you really need to have a Western eye or Western marketing. Even that, Kimberly, to be honest with you, the Western marketing branding only helps to a certain point. What you need is new iterations of development that bundle certain products together that gives the consumer value for the money, and also a new concept of how it helps them. So I think that's the most important thing, analyzing competition. What do I do that makes me different, or what's the differentiation factor? That's what you need to ask yourself. And usually it's an iteration of your product or a new product that comes with bundles. That's what we recommend companies, because, you know, that unique selling point is easily copyable, repeatable, unless you have different and you've got to keep bringing new products out. That's why some of the greatest brands on earth keep bringing products out.
Well, it's very interesting because there's news recently, Instapot went bankrupt, because they were not able to identify another product. People buy one Instapot, they don't need another one next year. And they weren't selling add-on products, you know, that could keep the customer engaged and interested. And they weren't able to identify additional, you know, auxiliary products, you know, appliances that a customer might be interested in. So after their initial growth, you know, and domination of the market, also other companies started to get into it and who had broader product lines and brought on their own version of that, you know, to compete with Instapot. So now Instapot is declaring bankruptcy because they weren't able to stand, you know, on their own 2 feet. So I think one question before we wrap up, listeners might ask is, how do we find data on our competitors?
Okay, so there's several programs that you can actually download and subscribe to. One of them is Helium 10. There's Jungle Scout. There's Merchant Words. I'm actually giving free shouts out to these programs. I should be charging them. But these programs are there, available. There's probably new ones I don't even know of. And so these programs are there to actually download and actually analyze competition online marketplaces. And one point I would say is, even if the competition is doing this, you are growing this way, just be wary, particularly if you're small and medium online e-commerce, or just make sure you level off and repeat with another product, like your Instapot example or another brand, because it will never be this. Sometimes growth is like this, but having multiple verticals going up. So that's very important, because with the online e-commerce platform, you will quickly take it over and you have to renew yourself. You'll be like a bit like Beyonce or Madonna, like over the decades, have to reinvent yourself, have new kind of material coming on, or you'll just be copied and you'll be history.
Great points. Thank you so much for this. And I'd like to encourage our listeners, in the show notes, we'll have Pradeep's name. You can find him on LinkedIn, information about his company. I'd also remind you, you know, we have all of our other podcasts on a variety of topics to help international trade, import, export, supplier agreements, distribution agreements, all those topics. And then for small and startup companies, we have a training bundle on importing and a training bundle on exporting. So lots of great resources. Pradeep, can you tell us briefly, like, what services your company offers? How will listeners, why would they want to reach out to you, and what circumstances?
Yeah, so we do product research and development, particularly for online e-commerce. So we'll tell you if you are interested in this particular niche, or tell us saying, hey, we have X amount of investment. Where shall we invest in a product development? We'll go away for 2 months and look at data and let you know exactly what product to buy from which supplier. We can do that. And also, we run full services online to take care of your online marketplace accounts like Amazon, from all the way from marketing, listing optimization, to actually running the inventory and the whole backend, Shopify, Amazon, also international marketplace, anywhere around the world.
That's fantastic. So listeners, you could use some of or all of those services, you know, to help grow and expand your business. Thank you very much, Pradeep, for joining us. And thank you, listeners, for participating on this. We're going to also make this available in video on different outlets, so we can share that information for you on the podcast as well. And we look forward to having you guys join us for the next podcast, and reach out to either Pradeep or myself for follow-up. Thanks again.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's all for this episode of the International Trade Resource Podcast. We hope you found this discussion insightful and informative. To find more episodes and more information on all things international trade, check out our website at www.intltraderesources.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review on your favorite platform to help us spread the word. Join us next time for more exciting insights on the global marketplace. Until then, keep thinking globally.